I don't really have anything new to talk about, other than I literally just got to here from getting a new tattoo, but that's it. I'm not gonna post it on our Instagram, so it doesn't really
I'm
matter.
trying to think of what have I done other than work, and a little bit more work.
No, we're just waiting to go buy fireworks next weekend.
Yeah.
We're not gonna get a lot, but it's like buy one, get two free or whatever, so. Because it's like you have the coupon for buy one get two free of any like
Like same
one
price or
nineteen
lower.
ninety nine yeah, and then $49.99 and like 80 or $99.99, I don't know, whatever.
You might as well use a few
But I
days at
literally went
least.
through that whole catalog and watched a video of every single firework and then circled the ones that
You've
would be
done
like
your
good enough to get.
homework.
Well, because it's like every year we've gone, like we try to get service in there to watch them, but we don't always get
It's true.
service. Or like it's just too many to watch while you're just standing in a fireworks store. So I was like, well, I'm gonna go through, circle the ones, because then if one isn't there, then here's another one we can get. So I was
That
like,
was
I just want
smart.
to make it as easy as it can go, and then we don't have to try to figure out what we actually want when we're there. We've already gone through and seen what is good. None of them have screaming stuff. So that was something I made sure of. If it was screaming, I immediately close the window. I was
No one
like, none
likes
of
it.
that, none of
When you're
that,
that
none of
close, it's
that.
just not nice.
I was like, show me the bugs, show me the willows,
I love the
show me
bugs.
the sparkle things, because
Love
those are
those too.
fine too.
Those are all nice.
That's it.
I like the
If you're
crackles are
doing,
okay.
yeah, that's those are the sparkle ones, the
That's what you mean by
crackly
that.
sparkle things.
They look
But I
like
was like, I went
sparkles.
through, but that's why I asked you. I was like, if you want to go, you can, because I don't know if we'll use all the coupons. So if there's some that you want to get or
Yeah,
whatever,
no, I get that.
like. Because I don't know if you want to shoot them off or not, but
I'm sure
then we
someone
have
else
enough. I know,
will.
I was like, then we have more because Dad's not going, so we'll still have a little bit extra to bring up because it's always better to have a little extra. That's all that we have planned is going to get fireworks next weekend. But I can't even talk about how slow it's been going leading up to this trip.
I thought next week was the week we
I did
left.
too. I did
And I've
too.
been
I
thinking
did
that for the
too.
last,
And then I
like,
checked the
3 weeks.
calendar and
And
I
I
was
was
like,
like,
I'm
how
gonna
dare
jump out a
June have this
window.
many weeks?
I know. I was like, who even likes June? This is trash month. Like, but then I'm like, this happens every year. Like, every year I'm just waiting to leave. The end of June is what I'm like pushing for. So, like, I literally don't care about June at all. I'm like, get me to July. Get me to July. Get me to the last week of June immediately. I know. I
And your
literally.
birthday present comes in today.
Oh, that's nice. I know, Drew. I called him on my way home to here from the tattoo place, and he was like, I ordered a bunch of your birthday presents. And I had only sent him like a few clothing items that I wasn't gonna buy for myself because they're more expensive. And I said, a few? I said, you're supposed to get me one. He was like, if I just got you one, you would complain. I was like, no, I sent you these ones because they're more expensive to where I can't justify just buying it for myself just because.
That's so funny.
I was like, these aren't just like, some of them are summer staples. Like, some of them are more of these and these. And but they're still like pricier because they're from the Lululemon, which is a more expensive place, but their quality is what I want. So today my story is about Marvin Alvin Clark. I got my information from Wikipedia.org, grunge.com, medium.com, and Mary.
Mary
Mary Hallberg
Hallberg. Yeah, Mary. Yeah,
Media.com? Something like that. I don't
I think
know.
we've used her for something else
I think
before.
so. All right, so here's his early life. Marvin Alvin Clark. Did I say? Yeah, I did the first time too. The census says that he was born in 1852 in Marion County, Iowa, but some reports said that he was born in 1857. Both of his parents were from New York, though. That's confirmed information.
Fun.
But since this is so old, there's really not too much. This is a pretty short little story I have here. He was a highly educated man who graduated from two different universities. I guess they
Wow.
don't know what universities,
We
because
know
it
he
I looked on all
graduated.
these sites and I would have put it if they said where.
Yeah.
But he and his wife Mary had four children and moved to Oregon around 1910, and they lived in Tigard. He was described as being a well-known resident of Tigard, about 10 miles south of Portland, and he was known to be adventurous. He was at one time the town marshal of Linton, a district that would later become part of Portland. And then some reports said that he was a farmer at one point and also a marshal in Nebraska for quite a period of
I
time.
believe he did all of those
But like,
things.
there's not,
That seems
yeah,
reasonable.
like, there's not. too much known. Like I said, like, there's not too much reported. If you lived,
like, west of the Mississippi and not in a city, you were the town marshal at some point, and you were always a farmer at some point.
It's about all the jobs there were. Unless you were rich. Yeah.
That's the one exception.
Okay. So, what is interesting about Mr. Marvin Clark here is that he is the oldest active missing persons case in America, allegedly.
So
they're pretty sure that he is the first.
I don't think he's still. I mean, like, obviously, we don't know where he is, but he's not. We don't got a lot of hope on finding this one alive.
Maybe he's also the first oldest, like, hundreds he's of years a old vampire. Man. Yeah, he could be. He could be. So here is about his disappearance. On October 30th, 1926, Clark left his home in Tigard around 1 p.m. to visit his daughter, Sydney McDougall, who was a resident and manager of the Hereford Hotel at 735 Hoyt Street in Northwest Portland. He never made it to the hotel, and he was last seen on the 30th. He was described as around 5'7"
5'7"
Which, like...
Hold on. Hold on. He was... Is it 7 or 8?
I don't know.
Or is he 5'7" Like, just slightly taller than Mom.
No, I think he's 5'7" or 8.
I think that's it, too. This seems more reasonable.
But my brain didn't. Otherwise... I did these notes, like, 2 or 3 months ago at this point. Did. So that's why I'm like, yep. I'm not going to catch it. My brain will not catch that. Anyway, so it read a fraction. So between 150 and 170 pounds and possibly wearing leather high-top boots and a dark suit, he had white/gray hair and blue eyes. Which, like, did his wife not, like, see him before he left and not remember? Well, I guess, like, people never really remember what their kids go missing in.
I don't know what, like when we're like, oh, we go out together, and you're like, oh, what are they wearing when you lose somebody in a crowd? Like, gosh, I don't know.
Yeah. I don't remember.
I never remember that.
Unless Audrey's wearing her pig octopus shirt.
Yeah, then I know.
So.
Like, I think it was bright color.
Yeah.
And then you see them, they're wearing brown.
Mom, normally it is a bright color.
Yeah, she's wearing pink or red.
Be making sure I didn't laugh too loud to turn off the recording. So Mary called, Sydney 2 days after he was meant to arrive and asked her when he planned on coming back home, but she didn't know that he was even visiting in the first place. He was doing like a surprise visit to his daughter.
Mm-hmm.
So the initial report of his disappearance on November 6th, 1926 was
the first report.
Yeah, so the initial report of his disappearance was on November 6th, 1926 by the Morning Oregonian.
I love old newspaper names. They're all nonsense words.
It said that he had embarked to Portland by stagecoach. Then a report published the following week said that he had traveled by bus. Which is other stuff that I'm like, why didn't his wife know how he was traveling to get there? Like, did they not talk to each other?
Were buses invented then?
I don't know.
I don't know when the car was invented.
I think it was, because there's 20s cars.
You're right. So there might be a bus by then.
So I'm like, I don't, like, which is another thing, like, why, I don't know. I feel like I would have asked Drew, how are you planning to get there?
You know. Yeah.
And it's in the 20s, so it's not buses. Like times when people, their spouses didn't really talk to each other, you know? Like, mm-hmm. It's not royal family where you live in separate wings of the castle.
He was born in 1850s, so him riding a motorized bus seemed isn't possible.
Okay, so according to newspaper reports, Clark suffered from paralysis and could not use his right arm, and he also walked with a, quote, halting gait, and sometimes needed a cane, which was a distinction that police hoped would help elicit sightings of mm-hmm. him, like, here's an old man who walks weird and sometimes uses a cane. And his right arm doesn't move. His daughter had offered a $100 reward for information leading to his discovery. One possible sighting of a man in a dark suit and slacks at a bus terminal in downtown Portland was thought to have been Marvin, but that never came through, obviously. On November 9th, the Dellingham Herald, a newspaper The Bellingham Herald, a newspaper in Bellingham, Washington, reported that Clark's wife, Mary, had received a disconnected postcard? What does that mean? I don't know. Reportedly written by her husband, that was postmarked in Bellingham, and that there had been witnesses who saw Clark at two hotels in the area on November 2nd and 3rd. The article read, quote, "The letter indicated that the aged man's mind is wandering and it was badly jumbled despite the fact that Clark is highly educated, being a graduate of two universities."
But they don't know what... 1920s. They don't know what Alzheimer's is.
Yeah.
They don't
know what dementia so, is. Yeah. In 1988, nearly 60 years after Clark's disappearance, which, like, that doesn't seem like from the 20s to the 80s.
It should be
longer than 60 years in my mind, which, like, that sounds stupid, but I don't know. Nearly 60 years after Clark's disappearance, loggers discovered a nearly complete human skeleton in the woods between Tigard and Portland. There was no identification found on the body, but an 1888 Liberty head nickel, a 1919 penny, a pocket watch from Sears, Roebuck & Co. leather shoes, and a Fraternal Order of Eagles pocket knife and four tokens with the inscription D&P were found near the body. A .38 caliber revolver and a spent shell were also found near the remains, as were a pair of wire glasses. So, during the obviously everybody was like, oh, like, this could be...
old-timey murder.
This could be this man. So, during the autopsy, Dr. Karen Munson observed a bullet hole in the man's skull and ruled the death a suicide. The estimated age of the John Doe was 33 to 55 years old. Several days after the discovery, Clark's granddaughter, Dorothy Willoughby, mm-hmm. came forward and said the John Doe might be her missing grandfather, but a positive identification could not be made at the time, and Willoughby died in 1991. In 2011, Dr. Nikki Vance of the Oregon State Medical Examiner's Office revisited Clark's missing person file, and forensic pathologists were able to retrieve sufficient DNA from the skeletal remains of the John Doe, which had remained in storage since the discovery of it, which it says 86, but I'm pretty sure it was 88.
Sometime in the late 80s.
Yeah. So, in a 2014 article published by the Oregonian, it was stated that the medical examiners were unable to locate maternal descendants of Clark in order to make a positive identification. Quote, "They're looking for a maternal link," said Vance. Someone on his mother's side and following that lineage to shore it up. She said there's an association there, but it's not strong at this point.
Yeah, so like a genetic association, there's somebody who is like a great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-great-grandma's the last time they were like related to each other.
Pam Knowles, a great-great-granddaughter of Clark, provided DNA samples along with her son to determine whether or not the remains of the John Doe were in fact Clark's. These DNA samples were sent to the University of North Texas for comparison, where it was determined that the remains were not those of Clark. After all these years of trying to figure out who this man was, it was still not.
Now, that's assuming
Clark
that they knew their actual lineage all the way up accurately, and nobody cheated on anybody.
Also correct. As of 2018, the identity of the John Doe's remains is unknown. The DNA samples provided by Knowles and her son remain on file with the National Missing and Unidentified Person System database for potential future comparison. To this day, it is speculated if he left on purpose, was there foul play, did he wander off and get lost, did some kind of accident happen. There was even speculation that he had been killed by an enemy made during his years in law enforcement. Rhianne?
Yeah.
Rhianne Hockla, Moultonham County police officer, I think that's how you say it, stated, quote, "If at any point in the future bones are sent in and it's Marvin, we will get a positive identification. And who's to say he won't be found by a hunter or a landscaper or developer or something like that happens." Or something like that happens. I don't know, whatever, how she said it. So there's a chance he could be found. Marvin Clark is considered by some to be the oldest active missing persons case in the U.S. If you have any information on the case, you can call 503-988-4300.
We've had so many cases.
And that is the story. I know. And that is the story of Marvin Alvin Clark, the oldest active missing persons case in America.
I mean, if he was going senile, has dementia or something, he might have just, like, wandered off and fell in a weird hole.
I know. Some people were like, they were thinking that maybe he still had...
got on the wrong bus.
Yeah. Well, some people were thinking that, like, maybe he still was, like, there enough, but he just, like, didn't want to disappoint his family with that issue and, like, went away on purpose.
No, he literally, that's what I was saying.
Like,
I think dementia has something to do with it, whether it's because he knew he was going, he didn't like that, and chose to do things about that, or... got on the wrong bus, went the wrong way, got lost, fell down a ravine, never found again.
A lot of stuff that could happen.
Yeah.
Especially up there.
I wonder who that other old-timey man is, though.
I know. I know. Because I was like, this case isn't very interesting until you get to that point.
There are, like, no old-timey
all
man.
This stuff that's on it. Like, imagine finding, like, that body and then seeing all that stuff. I would think that's really cool, personally, but...
And I wonder if, like, they found it immediately with it, or did they bring, like, the archaeologist out to, like, you know, dig around it? Like, what do you do with that? Because they know right away if it's an old-timey person or not. When, like, the coroner gets out there to be like, is this a murder victim? Well, it is, but it's an old one. So we treat this different.
Yeah.
I assume there's probably, like, rules with that, though. When you bring out the archaeologist to get the 100-year-old murder victim out.
I don't know.
If they're trying to do anything with DNA, I think you'd have to wear, you know, like, hairnets and gloves and... Okay. So I'm going to cover the Hot Lake Hotel today. My sources are hotlakelodge.com, Wikipedia, thatoregonlife.com, and inthedarkair.wordpress.com. So Ayakeshpa is what the Nez Perce called the hot springs and lake that is now in what is now known as Hot Lake, Oregon, the really original. It's like a good-sized hot springs. Like, obviously, it's called a lake, but, like, I didn't realize they came that big, basically, for the whole thing to be hot and that big.
Yeah.
That's hot.
I know. I think of just, like, the small little pools.
Yeah, because it's also mineral springs.
Well, I guess like, they have those big hot springs in, like, Iceland or wherever that is.
Yeah, but I would also just consider those sort of... The ones I've seen are just ponds. That's big. That's big for hot springs, too, in my opinion, but I would...
I've never been to one. I don't have
this is like a lake. Like, I looked it up. Anyway, so yeah, there's a big hot lake in Oregon. And it's in Hot Lake, Oregon. So the waters have long been used by Native peoples for their, like, medicinal properties because it's, you know, it's a mineral spring, so they are good for things. And it's hot water, and that's also good for things like rheumatism. And during the Oregon Trail, it became a popular stop for travelers. In 1964, Fitzgerald Newhart built the first commercial structure on the lake. It was a sort of strip mall, is the best way to describe it, in my opinion. It was long and had a lot of things happening in it. That's a strip mall, right?
Pretty much.
Yeah, this strip mall contained a post office, a blacksmith, a dance hall, a barber shop, a bathhouse, and a number of other businesses.
Nice.
That's a strip mall.
Yeah, I'd say so.
Yeah. He strangely built the building facing the bluff behind it because it's like there's like a bluff and then the lake is immediately next to the bluff. And he built it in between the bluff and the lake.
Yeah,
facing
what
the
a
bluff.
Great view. Ned. Can't help him.
Okay. So in 1884, the Union Pacific Railroad ran a line that went right near Hot Springs, which is always great for a town. It didn't, like, go to it, but it, like, went close enough by to maintain people being there.
Yeah.
In 1903, Newhart's wooden strip mall was torn down, and the construction of a brick hotel and bathhouse began. This time facing the lake.
As it should have been.
By 1908, the structure was completed with 105 guest rooms, a 60-bed surgical ward, a ballroom, a barber shop, a confectionery, a drugstore, a newsstand, multiple reception rooms, I guess. I don't know what that is.
A reception rooms?
Like, why would you need more than one? Laboratories.
Like, not a receptionist, but, like, reception, like...
Like, to have tea? And other such activities?
Like, where they hold weddings nowadays.
Maybe.
You know?
So laboratories, a 1,500-guest dance hall, and a commissary. So it was a hotel, a hospital, and a strip mall.
I was going to say, this is a really big place.
It's not.
Oh.
From what I understand, they sort of use each floor is, like, a different thing.
Okay.
So I don't know if the bottom or the top floor was the hotel. Uh-huh. Or if it was all the other businesses on one of the... But the third floor was the hospital. And they do specify that. So I think it was the third floor was the hospital, the second floor was the hotel, and the third floor was everything else. Mm. It's the Wild West. So everything else means... The barbershop is one chair in a tiny room. You know, like Wall Drug. How everything's like weird little teeny tiny stores.
Yeah.
Anyway, the property was self-sufficient. It produced its own vegetables, dairy products, meat, and eggs, which is always great in the Wild West. Not a lot of stores. In 1912, the Central Railroad of Oregon built a line from Richmond directly to the hotel. So this is when we start, like, the boom period of the hotel. In 1917, a man referred to as Dr. Fi...
Okay.
I can find nothing else out on this man, but they stated it like I should know who this is.
If you know who he is, anyway, let us know.
Dr. Fia bought the hotel and renamed it to the Hot Spills.
Hot Lake. I would stay there. The Hot Spills Lake.
The Hot Lake Sanatorium. It's still a hotel, by the way.
Hot Spills.
He just really is like expanding the hospital portion of it. I think, like, really encourages... So he's involved in the initial building of the brick hotel, hospital, everything else combo.
Yeah.
And then just ends up purchasing it a few years later. I don't know if he, like, couldn't then or what, or what happened there. He was involved in the building of it, later buys it. So he had something to do with the original hospital stuff put in. It became well known as being a resort for the rich... And a hospital. The hospital featured state-of-the-art soaking tubs and an operation room with an observation deck. You know, like in movies.
Yeah.
About the olden times when they're, like, doing lobotomies on women.
Go out on your porch. Get some sun.
No, but, like, they're down in the pit. They're doing operation. Yeah, people around it, like a little stadium.
Yeah.
So the mineral waters from the spring were used in experimentation to treat patients as well as the guests. I don't know if the guests knew this. They sort of worded it like the guests didn't know this. But the bright side is it's just mineral water.
Yeah, that's good enough.
Because they're specifically using the mineral water for this. Maybe they were doing other things. Don't get me wrong. They could totally be doing other things. We're going to hope it was just mineral water. Anyway, this made the hotel a pioneer in Western experimental medicine. A weird thing to say about a hotel.
Uh-huh.
It had 15 nurses, 4 physicians, an x-ray technician, and a bacteriologist. And that's wild, because this is not a big place even today to have this weird little science center in the middle of nowhere that's specifically a hospital and
that's
a hotel.
So weird.
And a barbershop and a post office. So by 1927, the hotel was a major tourist attraction. The Mayo brothers, who were the founders of the Mayo Clinic, were frequent guests, along with figures like Wild Bill Hickok. So it was like a bona fide, old-timey hot spring hotel, like all the other many hot spring hotels we've covered.
Yeah.
But also a hospital. That's just so weird to me. So in 1931, the mysterious Dr. Fi died of pneumonia on the property. So we know he died there of pneumonia. I bet he tried to cure it with mineral water. May 7th.
In sunshine.
May 7th, 1934, a fire destroyed what I think is the west wing of the hotel. Because when I read it, it said the right side. That's helpful. I think it's the west wing. Destroying about 65,000 square feet of building, which is a lot of building. Most of it, which had been constructed of wood, which is why it could burn so thoroughly, because it was, like, gone. It wasn't just, like, a little bit burned. It was, like, just ashes. 300 rooms and a dining area that could seat over 1,000 people were within this space, all of which have been destroyed. I don't think there were any deaths associated with it, though. None recorded, at least, that I saw.
Mm-hmm.
Thereafter, the hotel portion of the business declined because there was a giant fire. and eventually, only the hospital area located on the third floor was in use. Like, the hotel closed. I think the other businesses seemed to be gone by then. It's just the hospital mm-hmm. on the third floor. The brick part of the building, by yeah. the way, survived, obviously. During World War II, it was used as a training center and a nurse training center and a flight school. I think also still a hospital, which is why the nurse training yeah. center was there. So it's a hospital and these two other things. It has two unused floors, so why not? In 1953, the only thing the building was used for was a nursing home at this point, run by a Dr. Roth. Again, they don't specify more about this doctor. It's just Dr. Roth.
You know him, you love him.
In 1975, it became a restaurant and nightclub. This didn't last long. I think it only lasted like 2 years. There was just like not enough business around because it's yeah. a small town in the middle of nowhere. In the mid-1980s, it was briefly run as a bathhouse again. Again, failed because nobody's there. And by 1991, it was finally just entirely abandoned. There wasn't any side hustle on any level of it. In 2003, the Manuel family bought the hotel and began restoring it, adding a roof back, because it had no roof, and fixing 368 windows. They were either missing entirely or broken. Uh-huh. It's a lot of windows. And in 2005, they reopened it for public tours as, like, a historic Ooh. Destination. In 2008, the West Wing collapsed.
Oh.
And I looked at it, and I was like, the West Wing? Like, the brick part? No. They had, at some point after the fire, rebuilt a wooden portion, and that part fell. Stop building with wood is the moral of the story here. Actually, the moral of most of our hotel stories. Yeah. Don't build with wood.
Fire. Fire. It falls down.
By 2010... they were able to open it up as a bed and breakfast with a spa restaurant and a bronze foundry, as well as a museum. I think it had like 22 bedrooms that they were able to like get running, restore enough of the like entirely dilapidated structure. Like it wasn't like gross inside. It was like gone inside, yeah. you know? They didn't ever like succeed with this. So in 2020, the Grand Hot Spring RV Resort, which was run next door, bought the hotel and property and continued restoration work with, like, a focus on restoring the historical aspects of, which was really, That's really nice. Great. I'm very happy yeah. about that. They actually were interested in the property and not just, like, the business opportunity or getting rid of competition. Right?
Yeah.
So, like, they worked on restoring the grand entry porch, restoring the veranda, the... balustrades and the historic spring house. Amenities that they added included hot spring soaking area, they updated rooms, they added a movie theater and a thermal pub. Those are all things that like are functioning now. And then they plan to add conference spaces, a restaurant, concert venue, and additional spa services to what they already have. So they have goals and dreams, and they seem to be achieving them because they've
nice.
Added like an entire that. Movie theater. So yeah. They mean it when you do things like that. Now we get to the haunting part. When I found it, they're like, yeah, it's one of the most haunted places
in America.
All of Oregon. No, just Oregon.
Oh, that's better. That's better.
I was reading there, I was like, where are the hauntings? I couldn't find the hauntings. And I was a fool and did the entire history before looking at the hauntings. So over the years, it is said that many people have experienced strange occurrences at the Hot Springs Hotel.
Like the water being hot. Mysteriously.
Visitors have reported ghostly figures walking the grounds. Unexplainable voices, whispers, and footsteps have been heard throughout the hotel. Like, it's not just one room that's haunted, it's everywhere. Apparitions of people believed to be, no, former guests have been witnessed inside the hotel. Other people think they're former patients from when it was an asylum.
Oh, my.
By the way, it was never an asylum. A sanatorium and an asylum are not the same thing.
They definitely sound the same thing.
They feel like the words are the same thing, but they're not. there's much more choosing to be there in a sanatorium than there is in an asylum.
You're getting locked up in an asylum.
There's a ghost of a man who's believed to be a former gardener who committed suicide. Why they think these things? There's not like a report
because
of this.
Because some
they think
poor it's a former worker gardener. Has had to have committed suicide in every building
right?
ever.
Anyway, there's a guy who's a ghost who walks around the grounds in work clothes. And that's why he's not just a random guest wandering around, but yes. He has to be a poor person who committed suicide.
Yep.
There's a piano that was formerly owned by Marianne Custis Lee, wife of Robert E. Lee, that was placed on the third floor. This seems to be a real thing. Like, this piano was purchased, was owned by her, does exist in that space. And it apparently frequently is heard playing by itself.
Ooh, I like that.
Yeah, I always love
pianos
a good
are the
haunted
best
object.
Items.
A past owner, her husband, and their caretaker had a number of strange experiences while living on the hotel's second floor, including hearing screams and crying coming from what was previously the surgery room.
Disgusting.
And then seeing rocking chairs move on their own.
Ew.
I hate haunted rocking chairs so much.
Get rid of them.
During the period that the hotel sat abandoned, it was a popular place for people to go and vandalize and explore and pretend to do satanic rituals, etc. Just be general idiots. and this seems to me where most of the like haunting folklore comes from, because again, I wasn't finding any good haunting anything stories about it, especially since there were like non-specific. There's no like good deaths that happened other
yeah,
than
that
the
would
doctor
make sense
died of pneumonia.
For,
you know,
yeah.
I mean, it was a hospital, but it doesn't mean like an extensive amount of people died that was any more than normal. The same with the hotel. Like, oh, hotels have deaths. That's the nature of hotels. Doesn't mean there were a freak amount here. You know.
Yeah.
No one was doing anything evil. Evil. Except for experimenting with mineral water. Anyway. So, I might as well tell you one of the stories anyway that's like makes it a popular haunted location. So you get why people think it's the haunted, the most haunted place in Oregon, you know? So one of the stories tells of a group of girls from a local high school who are being general hooligans. And one of them was going down the hallway and like kicking each door open just for funsies. And all of a sudden,
isn't that hilarious?
Yeah, it's so funny. You know they had to be cracking up. Anyway, all of a sudden, one of the doors they just kicked open slams back in their face. They're like, that's weird. So they turn around, like, facing the way that they just come from, where they kicked all the doors open, and they were slamming shut one by one, starting at the furthest ones, like, approaching them. So it's like,
I like that.
Boom, you know, that kind of scary movie thing. So obviously, all the girls ran out to their car screaming, and they're like, there's no way that just happened. So they go back to like go see, well, are the doors open or closed? Because we know we opened them for a fact, right? And it'd be weird if they're all closed. So like maybe something weird did happen then. So as they're trying to go back in, going to the front door, all of the windows, they open at once. And then the girls actually left for real that time.
Yeah.
I think all of that story is made up, but it's fun.
It is.
And
it's
I think
good,
it's
a good folklore.
It's a good folklore. Great folklore.
A good spooky.
And it's folklore like this that I kept finding.
Yeah.
That was all like over the top Hollywood stories where it's like it's because people were having a good fun time and are trying to scare their friends from like going in there so they can all be brave.
Yeah.
Blah blah blah. The rite of passage hooliganness of abandoned places.
I never did that.
Nope.
I'm respectful of other people's property.
Yep. Anyway, that's Hot Lake Hotel. Hot Spells Hotel. And all the hooligans who made it famous.
See, it's like I always find haunted places like that, and I just like the history more than the ghost stories most of the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why I keep them in. But
yeah, I was like, no, this is such a weird place because it's not big. It's not a big building. When you go to get pictures for the Instagram post, it's not a big place. How did it fit all these things?
That's weird. I'll have to see it whenever I post about it.
But apparently it was, like, genuinely doing things for, like, medical advancement because, like...
That's, like, why there? That's what's weird.
I think... I didn't read into, like, the contents of the mineral springs, but I think they were, like, a quality set of minerals mixed in there that had, like, actual medicinal properties.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know what they discovered. I didn't look into that because I didn't think about it until right now. But yeah, that's the Hot Lake Hotel.
All right. Well, try not to kill anybody and don't mess with Ouija boards.
Bye.